You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and welcome to the show. A lot going on. Today we're going to get to today's special edition of Brunch with Bernie. Bernie right now, we're waiting for him to connect with us because he's on the bus. Maybe it's Bus with Bernie. He's on the bus with a bunch of, I think they're all Democratic senators, from the White House back to the Senate office buildings. They just met with President Obama. So as soon as Bernie hooks up with us, we'll find out what came out of that. But before we get on to other things, I also wanted to let you know that OptimaTaxRelief.com are proud underwriters of the Tom Hartman Program. Facing back taxes, IRS liens, bank levies. For more information, OptimaTaxRelief.com. Also, we'd like to welcome WBAI-FM 99.5 FM in New York and KBU-FM 90.7 in Portland. Also, KXRY-FM, X-Ray-FM will be running all 3 hours live in Portland soon. So that's what's up here. And we're, let's see, is Bernie's, no, Bernie has not called in from the bus yet. So we will be having, we're going to do a special brunch with Bernie a day early. I'm going to be traveling tomorrow. And so Bernie, we had thought that he would be back to the Senate recording studio by now so he could come in and be with us at exactly this hour. But apparently he's on the bus with a bunch of Democratic senators coming from the White House from a meeting with President Obama to the Senate office building. And so he may call in. We may have Bus with Bernie, or he may just show up a little later on. So anyhow, we're figuring that out. In the meantime, it looks like John Boehner has said that he's going to what else is going on in the rest of the program today? In our second hour, Senator Sherrod Brown is going to drop by. Dr. Joe Rahm is going to be with us, senior fellow of the Center for American Progress and the founding editor of Climate Progress. This is a guy with a PhD in physics from MIT. David Selig is going to be with us in our third hour. And the person who is apparently the founder, former trucker, independent trucker of America, the founder of this giant truckers protest that is happening in Washington, D.C. And is this going on today or is this coming up? I think it's tomorrow. Yeah. Oh, Saturday? Yeah, this weekend. Okay. Vow to flood the nation's roadways this weekend with a ride for the Constitution to save our nation from domestic enemies such as Barack Obama, John Kerry, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain. So it's going to be an interesting third hour, too. So, remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And Joe Rahm just published a piece. Joe Rahm's going to be with us. Just published a piece about the PETM, saying that evidence of a rapid release of carbon in the PETM concludes that sediment data indicates that carbon was released in a geologic blink of the eye over the period of 13 years. The surface of the ocean rose by 5 degrees centigrade, and that's pretty remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Yeah. So, and the truckers have shut down America. Now, back to John Boehner, what I was telling you about John Boehner. John Boehner has apparently said that he's going to release one hostage, but he's going to hang on to the other. Keep in mind, he's got two hostages, and he's holding both of these hostages in exchange for doing away with Obamacare, right? Or postponing it for a year, which would functionally do away with it. I mean, you know, they know where the levers are. The big business exemption for a year that President Obama pushed, they're saying that's like half of it. It's actually like 4% of it. The 96% of it is the individual mandate. And so, well, we'll see how this plays out. But anyhow, what Boehner has said is that he will release the hostage of the debt ceiling because he's getting calls from, like, Wall Street billionaires who are saying, "Hey, John, you ever wake up to a horse's head in your bed?" You know, things like that. In fact, maybe he did wake up to a horse's head in his bed. He seems to be running scared. It's like the problem here's the deal. I mean, this is what's so funny about this. The Republicans right now have the same problem that the dog that caught the car had. You know, we used to have this dog, you know, Sabra. We loved to chase cars. Thank God she never caught one. But she would chase cars, you know, down the road. And we lived in this dirt road out in the middle of nowhere in Vermont. And she would chase the cars. But it's like I always wonder what would happen if she ever really, you know, locked her jaws out of the bumper of one. It's like, whoa, off on the ride. Well, this is what's happened. You know, the Tea Partiers have been going, yap, 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 yap. And so Boehner said, okay, you know, we're going to chase this car. We might as well catch it. And so, you know, he bit down on the shutdown of our government. And now they're riding that. And then he bit down on the blow up the debt ceiling, you know, blow up the full faith and credit of the United States and provoke another downgrade in our credit rating and another great recession. He chased two cars. Well, he's decided that he's not going to bite down. He already bit down on and is hanging on to the shutdown of the country. Today is day, what, 10? I think, yeah, today is day 10 of the government shutdown. So we're 10 days into John Boehner having his teeth into the bumper of that car. And it's starting to really hurt. NASA's, for example, I did an interview with another television network this morning about our Last Hours documentary. And in that interview, we were talking about, you know, how much carbon is there in the Arctic. And the carbon in the Arctic is like, you know, several trillion tons of it. And NASA is doing this incredible research project. It's called the CARV, C-A-R-V-E, which I think stands for Carbon Arctic Reservoir. I don't remember what the V and E stands for, something experiment. And they're trying to figure out how much actually carbon is up there in the Arctic that might, and most of it frozen methane, that might percolate into the atmosphere very, very rapidly and cause an extinction if it gets warmed up enough. And they're like, I don't know. I mean, this is pretty scary stuff. It's like really downright spooky. So anyway, if you go to CARV's website, this is NASA who's running this thing. If you go to their website, what you get is a sign that says, sorry, we can't provide you with the data that we're gathering because we're shut down because of the government shutdown. John Boehner bit that car. So with regard to the car of the debt ceiling, Boehner has said, we will give you until the day before Thanksgiving. Without conditions. And the president responded just a few minutes ago saying, well, that sounds good. I'm not sure it's such a good idea just to do it till Thanksgiving. Why don't you do it, you know, until the next presidential election or something? I mean, you know, why don't you do it for a year anyway? It's not even until the next presidential election. But it's not even until the next election. It would become an instant election issue for 2014. Right? Ta-da! Wouldn't the Republicans love that? But let's do it for a year. And Boehner says, no, we'll give you till Thanksgiving. So he's letting one hostage go, or he's offering to. But the question the president raised was, you know, can you get that passed through the House? Do you have enough Republicans who will even vote for that? And Boehner's like, hey, I'm just yapping at this car. I don't know. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Pick up your thoughts, too, on this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And as I mentioned, Sherrod Brown, Bernie hopefully will be with us soon. We're still waiting for the bus to get over to the Senate office building and for our brunch report. Think about this. If you were standing in the midst of an extinction, is it possible you could be completely unaware of it? Underground, underwater, and below the ice, a time bomb is ticking. Scientists are seeing the evidence. Runaway climate change could be closer than we think. Go to lasthours.org and share the video with your friends now to help get this important message out right away. Take it back to mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And we just got an update that Senator Sanders is still in the White House. So, well, I don't think he'll take our call if we call him there. So, Brunch with Bernie has been postponed until later on in the program. I'm not sure exactly when, but, I mean, you know, it might be 5 minutes, it might be 50, so we'll see. So, I'm not Bernie, but I normally take calls here anyway, so Susan in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Very happy to talk to you, Tom.
Thank you, Susan.
I don't know why I have not heard, and I'm one of those listeners, listens to everything, have not heard anybody report, and you might know why, the fact that contractors, government contractors, are furloughing. My daughter works for one of the largest government contractors in the United States involved in all sorts of things, and their entire staff here has been furloughed for the foreseeable future, and how they're handling the people getting paid anything, they're allowing them to, of course, use their vacation time and sick time and even go negative, which, of course, means that in 2014, no one there is actually going to get a vacation, because they'll be used up now trying to keep the roof over everybody's head while this is going on. But they're down to just an absolute skeleton crew. And that's just been on all levels. So she's not a lower worker there.
You know, this is, Susan, this is a for-profit corporation that your daughter works for. You would think that they would have the, and they're what they're doing is the income from the government has stopped, and so they're stopping the income to their employees. What they could do, and what companies that have strong unions have done in the past, I'm thinking back in the 70s, the auto industry, when there was when the big oil boycott, you know, by the Arab oil boycott and all that kind of stuff, and what it did was over a period of a few months, it hit the auto industry really bad. People stopped buying cars for a couple of months, and the unionized auto manufacturers simply said, "We're going to continue to build cars. We're going to continue, as I recall, I may be wrong on this, but this is my recollection. We're going to continue to pay our workers." Our stockholders are not going to get as much in dividends, and perhaps our CEO is not going to get as well paid. Lee Iacocca famously only took $1 one year when Chrysler was going through a rough time, rather than sticking it to their employees. So the corporation that your daughter works for, they could say, we're not going to pay large dividends to our stockholders, and we're not going to pay large salaries to our senior executives. We're going to keep our frontline employees paid or even half paid. I mean, do it like the Germans do, Kurzarbeit, do it 80% pay or something like that. But apparently they're choosing not to.
Some people are getting in like 24 hours a week on and off.
Yeah.
so they work for it. But we're talking upper middle management and down. So
yeah.
Not just, all from everywhere. And I just don't hear it being reported anywhere. That I just think that the impact on furloughing is being underreported.
Yeah, I think you're right. Susan, very well said. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Hank in Fort Morgan, Colorado, listening on AM 760.
Hey there, how you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm a little bit upset, and the reason I'm upset is the rhetoric that's being used currently. And I'll explain this in a way that I hope makes it resonate. Whether you are progressive, whether you are conservative, whether you are a Tea Party member, whether you're a diehard Democrat, we are all American citizens. And when you see your politicians standing in front of a camera and also your media personnel accusing other people that have different points of view as being hostage takers, anarchists, terrorists in some case, that is very disrespectful to us as a nation. And shows that
let me ask you a question, Hank. If you took an action intentionally that you knew was going to cause somebody to die, would you be responsible? Would you be responsible for some form of homicide?
Of course.
Okay. Now, there's a bunch of cancer trials going on.
Well, no, hold on.
And I have some personal knowledge about this, Hank, so just stop talking for a second. My daughter, my oldest daughter's boyfriend, fiancé, just died from leukemia. He's dead. They buried him about 4 months ago. And he had gone through a clinical trial of an experimental drug, and it extended his life by about 6 months. But that particular drug in that particular clinical trial was curing about half the people who had leukemia. His problem was that he was over 25. It was working really, really well, 80, 90% success rates with children. There's a bunch of kids with the exact same disease that my daughter's fiancé had, that leukemia, who were set up for and who are past the ability. I mean, they're not just diagnosed with leukemia. They are dying of it right now. Every day that goes by, they get closer to dying. And they're in these clinical trials with the same drug, and that clinical trial has been suspended for the last 10 days because John Boehner will not allow the House of Representatives to vote on a clean continuing resolution.
Realize this, though. Our government is not a one-party government.
Wait a second, Hank. It is. Right now, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, has the legal ability under the rules of the House to prevent the House from voting on any piece of legislation, including the legislation that will continue the government funding. John Boehner has made the decision, the intentional decision, to not allow his own Republicans to vote on whether or not the United States government should continue operating. And I say to you, if you think that extremist and terrorist and hostage taking are extreme words, I say to you that John Boehner is guilty of manslaughter, that he is a killer. Take it to the bank. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I was pretty... Well, actually, I believe it. I really do. I'm not going to apologize for saying it. Okay, welcome back. John Hartman here with you. So, I just called John Boehner a killer. You know, it's not just probably. That's over-the-top language. I apologize. To you and to John Boehner. However, the story is true. And I think it's what got me so worked up. My future son-in-law just died after going through standard chemotherapy for leukemia. It didn't work. And then enrolling in a clinical trial, he and my daughter had to fly out to Chicago from Portland and stay in this hospital. You know, just this whole thing. And I watched him die. I mean, I wasn't there when he actually died, but I Louise and I were there many times during the course of his dying of leukemia. And there are children in these clinical trials. And these clinical trials are being suspended. And Boehner had to have known that stopping the government would lead to the death of some of these people. And there are others as well. I mean, there are the more subtle effects. You go back and look at go into the Google machine or the DuckDuckGo machine and just type in more suicides under conservative rule and BBC in 2002, and you can read the article. A 100-year-long study. Cut back on government programs, you know, when conservatives are in power. And people fall through the social safety net and crash. They don't have access to things like unemployment insurance. Suicides go up. Families fall apart. I mean, this is serious stuff. The reason I'm apologizing for calling John Boehner a killer is not because I'm walking back the statement that his actions may well and, in fact, almost certainly are leading to the death of human beings. Because I believe that they are. But rather that it's inflammatory rhetoric, as the caller pointed out when he called me. He said, we're all Americans. And he's right. And I've had 5 minutes to think about it now. And so I think it's important to point out that there are very real-world consequences to this. This is not just a game of chicken. And... And my role, whatever role I may play in this, should probably not be that of the guy who's pouring gasoline on a small fire, but rather somebody who's trying to put the fire out. I'm still really conflicted, though, about it. It's like, where do you draw those rhetorical lines? But Killer certainly is a place that I should, you know, I should not go. So I apologize to you and to John Boehner for that. I very rarely get that worked up, and I just went over the top. Richard in Winchester, Virginia. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Tom. According to the New York Times, officials of the Republican Party met on the night of the second inauguration where they had plans to shut down the government. And at the very least, it's a conspiracy. At the very worst, it's either criminal or, at worst, treason. Now, the dictionaries... definition for treason is the offense of attempting by overt acts to overthrow the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance. Is there any way, and maybe you could, if
Richard
Sanders gets on,
Richard,
check
well.
With him, if you don't mind, to see could the attorney general or a special prosecutor or a special grand jury investigate that?
Well, I think, you know, investigating whether or not there was a conspiracy to shut down the government and cause all those harms just for purely political purposes probably is a really good idea. The investigation should be done by the news media, though, not by the government. I think that you're making the same mistake that I made just 6 or 8 minutes ago when I used the word killer. You're using the word treason. These guys are not overturning our government. They're not overthrowing our government. They are suspending our government. They are stopping our government. They are harming our government. There's no doubt about it. They are harming the American people. There's no doubt about that. People are being hurt. People may well die. That's all not in dispute. But this is, in my opinion, not treason. We had this conversation last week or earlier this week, and somebody suggested maybe we should call it sedition. And Shane looked up the definition yesterday and shared it with me, the legal definition of sedition. And that involves the use of force. And this is not the use of force. So I don't think that the Republicans are engaged in either treason or sedition. I think that they are playing a very crass form of politics. And at a certain level, those of us on the left and Democrats have to look at ourselves and admit that our president played a small role in this, in as much as he gave in to John Boehner last time around. You got that Boehner clip, Shane, if I got 98% of what I wanted, where the last time that there was a threat of this was the debt ceiling, as I recall, the last time President Obama sat down with John Boehner and said, okay, let's work out a deal. And here's what John Boehner had to say about that.
And when you look at this final agreement that we came to with the White House, you know, I got 98% of what I wanted. I'm pretty happy.
So, and that was the sequester. So, which is included, by the way, in the budget, the clean continuing resolution budget that the Democrats in the House of Representatives just sent back to the House of Representatives, the Democrats in the Senate just sent to the House of Representatives. It includes the sequester. So I think it's time for all of us, myself included, given what I just said, to back away from the extreme rhetoric and just start calling this what it is: bad politics. And frankly, I think it's bad politics for the Republican Party as well as for the Democratic Party, for all of us. It's just bad for all of us. Wes in Willits, California. Hey, Wes, what's up?
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me on. What is happening right now is something I saw coming and something I feared. Those two dreaded words, grand bargain, are coming back. What they did was whip up the Tea Party base with the promise of using the shutdown and holding the debt ceiling hostage to defund the Affordable Care Act. And then they know that that's never going to happen. So now the GOP is swapping their demands of defunding the Affordable Care Act for the grand bargain. This is why Boehner keeps saying, I will not pass a clean bill until we have a conversation. They're going to do a short-term debt ceiling raise if they agree to the grand bargain where the Republicans get their wish list, which are Social Security cuts, Medicare means testing, approving Keystone, on and on. And a lot of these are things that Obama's been pretty eager to give them. Obama says he will not make governing by crisis the new normal, but that's exactly what he's doing. This now sets a precedent, making it routine for them to shake him down for cuts and concessions. This shows the Republicans that Obama's a pushover, and all they have to do is hold the debt ceiling hostage, and he'll cave and give them whatever they want. And my question is, how do we fight this?
Well, you let your elected representatives know, and you let the White House know how you feel about it. The White House comment line, I hope they're still open in the face of the government shutdown. I'm not sure. I haven't called it recently. Most members of Congress, many members of Congress, still have some staff, and they're still answering their phones. That's the only thing, the way I know to fight it. I'm Wes, with regard to the president being a pusher, yes, the president has suggested that he's willing to go along with the chain CPI, which is a cut to Social Security, which I think is horrible public policy and bad politics. And there may be other, and the Keystone XL pipeline is up in the air, and they're still building the thing every single day as we speak. And so there's little doubt in my mind that it's going to be completed. So maybe this is the way that the president ends up saying to the Democrats, well, I had to do it to keep the country from going into bankruptcy or something. I don't know. I don't know the politics on this. I think you and I are both speculating. The one thing that I am hearing out of the White House is that the president is not going to, he says anyway, is not going to allow himself to be bullied and backed into a corner like he was 2 years ago. We'll see. We'll see, Wes. I think I'm with you. Errol, we got a minute to the break in Lexington, South Carolina. You're on the air.
Okay, minute's long enough. I am a rare liberal Southern Baptist. Anyway, sure. My question is, why are we always on the defensive? Why don't the Democrats make demands of their own? How many bills are there out there that we need to push? Infrastructure bills, jobs bills, transportation bills. We never put anything on the table.
I absolutely agree with you. The Democrats should be right now. They should be demanding tariffs. They should be demanding single payer health care. They should be demanding at the very least a public option for Obamacare. You want to modify Obamacare? Fine. Let's just toss a public option into the mix. They should be demanding rolling back the Reagan tax cuts and taking the top tax rate back to 74%. I absolutely agree with you, Errol. I think that the Democrats have been playing defense basically since the Clinton administration. They certainly didn't during the Lyndon Johnson administration, and Jimmy Carter didn't play defense that often. This is something that is relatively recent, and in the last 20 years or so, and I just think it's very, very bad politics. Thank you, Errol, for the call. Well said. We'll be back 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So we're still waiting to find out where Bernie is. It appears he and probably Sherrod Brown as well are both still at the White House. So we'll stick around. And welcome back, Marvin in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Marvin, what's up?
Okay, Tom, I'm wondering, let me just turn this down.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is it a strategy, is it a Republican strategy to pick and choose the various things they want to fund, and then when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, are they going to defund it?
Yeah, well, that's the effort that they're making, yes.
But although that's the effort, is that their strategy?
I think the problem that they have, and this is why they're using the debt ceiling, this is why they're using the 600-pound gorilla or the giant axe or whatever, metaphor you want to use for something really, really radical. This is why they're using the debt ceiling to do it, is that Obamacare is pre-funded for the next several years. The funding mechanism for Obamacare was built into the original legislation. It does not require a continuing resolution to keep on going. Healthcare.gov is working just fine. All the people involved in Obamacare and the programs, they're working just fine. I mean, they've obviously got a few glitches here and there. Every new program does, but But the fact of the matter is they're not being furloughed. And so they can't stop Obamacare by the normal budget process, by saying, okay, we're going to pass a new budget or we're going to pass a continuing resolution and exclude these kind of things. They can't do it. They would have to have the agreement of both the Senate and the White House and the president to change, to fundamentally change the law itself, the initial law, and thus the funding associated with that law. And, of course, the Democrats are not going to go along with that. So, makes sense, Marvin?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. Good on you for all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Tough times. I think we just leave it to the lawyers to call it sedition or call it treason. Let's just call it what it is. It's corporate fascism. And we reject corporate fascism when it's forced onto us.
Well, hang on just a second, Bob. You've got now the Chamber of Commerce and Koch Industries coming out and saying that they're not in favor of shutting down the government and they're not in favor of hitting the debt ceiling. So I'm not sure that this is corporate fascism. I think that the Koch brothers created this dog, this Frankenstein's monster dog, and this dog has got hold of the bumper of the car and doesn't know what to do with it.
Okay, but could I just say that sure. I don't think everybody who works for a corporation or everybody who forms a corporation or everybody who has a lot of wealth is necessarily corporate fascist.
Neither do I.
You know, I think that some people are, and they don't care about democracy. And I think we're seeing the propensity of a few people who are mean and nasty and an inability of a lot of good people working in the same system that's vulnerable to this who will just really not stand up to it.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't disagree with that statement. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back in 10 minutes before the end. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you 10 minutes before the hour. And Mike in Aurora, Colorado, listening on KKZN. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So I just want to say, you know, earlier you kind of went on the rant. You kind of recanted what you said about John Boehner. I really feel like, you know, there are, you know, you maybe you went a little far on some technically calling him a killer. But I believe that, you know, that was raw, pure passion that came out of you, Tom. And you have to know that I was sitting listening to my radio and cheering for you at the same time, because you know what you felt there was passion for, you know, the loss of a family member. And I truly believe that, you know, people are looking for that kind of support and that kind of talk right now. It was great. I have to say it was great. You know, and the main reason that gentleman had called was that he wanted to say that, oh, this is a two-party system and, you know, we're not running it like a two-party system. Well, I would believe that this is the epitome of a two-party system. You know, some party or one party not getting everything that they want. And if you want to talk about a party who doesn't want a two-party system, let's look at the Tea Partiers right now. Let's look at the Republicans. They frighten me, Tom. They're wanting only what they want. They're governing in a technically a religious way, you know, and they want what they want and no compromise whatsoever. You know, I think that gentleman was wrong. I think you had absolutely every right to go on with that type of passion, and thank you for it. And don't let it stop you again.
Okay, Mike, let me respond, if I may. I don't take back the truth of what I was saying. I mean, the reality that people may and probably almost certainly will die as a result of this, that I saw this in my own family and just a few months ago, and that's still pretty raw for me. And I know it is for my daughter and all that stuff. But to call somebody a killer when what they're doing is politics, I think is over the top. I did it myself. For 10 years I've been doing this show and I have prided myself, frankly, on my ability to interact with people who are very unreasonable in a reasonable fashion and to help teach others to do the same. And I think I could have conveyed that message without ending up with that one word. I could have said, you know, how does he look at himself in the mirror at night, or how can he sleep at night, or, you know, somebody needs to point out to him that people are dying as a result of this, or will die, children will die as the result of this. I mean, somebody needs to point these things out. I'm saying all those things right now. I absolutely stand behind that. But calling one guy a killer, that's over the top. And I did that, and I, as I said, I apologize for it. So, thank you for appreciating my passion. And I have a lot of passion around this. But being passionate doesn't mean that you reach out and punch people. It means that you have conversations with them. And I think that using rhetoric like killer is punching it rather than being, you know, having the conversation. So anyhow, Joe in Chicago Heights. Hey, Joe, what's up? Thanks for listening to CPT.
I was going to say that, one, the Republicans have called Democrats the same many times before during
sure.
certain policy debates.
That doesn't make it right for
and
me to
also,
do it.
No, it doesn't make it right, but it seems to me that the Democrats need to start leveling with the American people and addressing the fact that, for the most part, the Republicans are pathological liars, and explain why people become pathological liars when they feel insecure to succeed in their merits, their skills, and facts. And this is what's happening with the GOP.
And well, sometimes also, people lie, and sometimes for those reasons. I think that there also is a fair number, you know, we know that politics and the senior levels of business tend to attract sociopaths, and that's problematic for you know, our political and our business
true.
Systems.
True, and also that we've degenerated into a system that, for the most part, Democrats propose policies and legislation to help society, and the Republicans simply make it their business to oppose everything. Aside from a couple of bills that profit people.
Well, Republicans aren't just opposing everything. They're actually making specific proposals like, let's roll back the New Deal, let's roll back the Great Society. They rolled back a lot of the Great Society during Bill Clinton's presidency. Now they want to roll back the New Deal. And I think the really important thing is for Democrats not to go along with that, especially the president. So, but your point is well made. Your point is well made. Did you want to make you were talking about voting districts. Was that your point, ultimately,
well,
Joe?
Well, the one last thing was that I think that the Democrats have to take away from this, pushing through this idea that we need a national law that makes congressional districts a product of nonpartisan committees instead of, you know, partisan electric
yes.
bodies.
Yes, yeah, do voting districts. I would say do them by computer algorithm. You can plug into a computer a formula where it says, okay, here's the geographical area, here's the population distribution. How can we make each one of the congressional districts have the identical same number of people in them and have each district most closely resemble a polygon, a geometric shape that has relatively equal sides, all the sides are roughly equal. And how do we do that? And that would be the challenge. And I would be all in favor of that. I think that's a great suggestion or some variation on that. I'm with you, Joe. Mike in Scotts Valley, California. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Okay. That's funny, that thing you just said. Actually, I'm an engineer who works in Silicon Valley, and I'm actually doing that just for fun.
Really? Creating a software program that will create?
I really am. In fact,
go ahead.
Yeah. And by the way, just as a data point, it's kind of interesting. There's the distribution of votes aren't fair. If you do it fairly, Texas really deserves two more representatives, and Ohio deserves two less.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the algorithm the country uses.
Yeah,
anyway,
I don't either.
That's why I call. I'm actually an older American working in Silicon Valley, and I'm looking for work right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this week has been really bizarre. This is the effects of the shutdown. I had a phone screen. I had an interview. They were both shut down, and the recruiter came back. They said they had 10 open positions. They pulled them all.
Hmm.
And normally during the day I would get a couple dozen emails and a couple dozen mm-hmm. cell phone calls. A lot of them are these recruiters offshore that are worthless.
Right.
I've received nothing today.
Oh, I got to tell you, Mike, I use Uber. I've told you about using the Uber instead of a taxi service here in Washington, D.C. It's less expensive than cabs, and you get basically – one-man entrepreneurs, you know, that you own your own car, you could be an Uber driver. My Uber driver today was a White House chef. He was a White House chef. He was telling me stories about flying around the world with presidents. And he's on furlough. And he's driving an Uber car. It was, and he said a bunch of his friends are at the bar getting drunk, and he's not going to go down that road. So he signed up with Uber to make some money on the side. It's incredible. Mike, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
You're listening. listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with us, with you, with us, is Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie day early. Senator Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. What's up? I understand you just came from the White House. I don't know if you can talk about that or not.
Well, there's not a whole lot. It was, as an independent, I'm a member of the Democratic Caucus. We met for an hour or so with the president, just reviewing where we are right now.
I see. Okay. So your thoughts for the day?
Well, let me just...
The week.
I know, you know, in Vermont, and I know all over this country, people are angry and they're disgusted and they're frustrated with what's going on in Washington. I guess the last poll had the Congress at 5%, and the Onion magazine put out a headline that psychiatrists are very deeply worried about the 5% who think that Congress is doing a good job. and everyone has every right, I mean, to be angry. I was just at a rally a few hours ago with hundreds of federal employees. They work in, you know, all kinds of agencies. They're not able to do their job. You know, they have kids. They have families. They're not getting paid. You know, they're worried about their mortgages and their car loans. And we got families in Vermont and again, all over America worried about Head Start, worried about the WIC program, which provides nutrition to pregnant women, low-income pregnant women and children. We've got the Meals on Wheels program. We've got all kinds of vulnerable people out there. I'm chairman of the Veterans Committee, very, very worried about the impact of this on veterans. We have been making some progress in speeding up the claims process, which has been a disaster, and that's going to be set back as a result of this. Now, we worry that in a couple of weeks, whether disabled vets are going to get the benefits to which they are entitled, or that's going to be delayed. So it is a disaster, and the people are hurting, and the people are disgusted. And I just want to give you my explanation as to why all of this is happening. And the first thing that I want people to appreciate is that when Speaker Boehner or anyone else gets up there and says, we want to talk, we want to negotiate, they have to understand, and it's not widely known, that what the Senate did in passing its budget, its continuing resolution, it was a terrible budget. It was the Republican budget. This was $986 billion, which is $70 billion lower than the budget we passed in the Senate. It's a terrible budget. But we did it because Boehner had assured the majority leader in the Senate that, okay, if you do that, we're going to have a continuing resolution. We can go from there, and they will pass it. They didn't. They reneged on that agreement for whatever reason. And they say, okay, that's a start, but we want more and more and more. We want, in an unprecedented way, to say, yeah, the Affordable Care Act passed Congress. The Supreme Court upheld it. We ran a presidential election on it, and the Republicans lost. Republicans lost seats in the Senate. They lost seats in the House. And they lost the White House by 5 million votes. But despite all of that, what we, the right-wing Republicans, want is for you to eliminate Obamacare or push it back a year. And that's just an outrageous demand. And it sets, Tom, and the point that I want to make as strongly as I can, it sets a very, very dangerous precedent for this country, because what you are essentially doing is annulling, doing away with the election that we had last November. And the guys that lost the election say, yeah, we lost the election, but you know what? We intend to get everything that we wanted to get anyhow, because if we don't get it, we're not going to pay our debts. We'll plunge the United States and the entire world into a major fiscal crisis. We're going to cause all kinds of pain in this country by shutting down the government. You can't do business. You can't give in to that type of threat, that type of blackmail, because you're setting a horrendous precedent. You give in today, and absolute certainty, 100% certainty, a year from now, they'll be saying something else. If you don't give us the ending of Social Security, if you don't kill Social Security, if you don't kill Medicare, we are not going to allow the government to function. So it is a very difficult moment for the people in our country, but there is a principle that has to be established, and that is elections matter in a democratic society, and you can't cave in to blackmail.
It's like they're trying to rewrite the rules of 230-plus years of our republic.
They surely are. And the issue here, it's not just their views, which are extreme right-wing. That's one thing. But they are breaking the rules about how the democratic system plays. You and I grew up believing that, you know, somebody is in an election, somebody wins, somebody loses. These guys lost, and they lost pretty bad. They lost the White House by 5 million votes. They lost 2 seats in the Senate. They lost seats in the House. They lost badly, and they said, it doesn't matter. You got to give us what we campaigned on. Now, if you go through that process, what is the sense of elections? What do elections matter? So it's important that the Democrats and the Republicans remain strong on that. The other point that I would make, and it has been made often, is that there are a number of non-right-wing extremist Republicans in the House who are prepared to work with virtually all of the Democrats in the House to vote for a clean budget continuing resolution. And that means that the government could reopen tomorrow if the Speaker of the House simply allowed them to have a vote. If he brought the budget that we passed here onto the floor and said, okay, vote it up or down. Now, Boehner has said a couple of days ago that he doesn't think he has the votes. Other people are pretty sure that the votes are there. So you have virtually all the Republicans, you have 20, 25, all of the Democrats, 20, 25 Republicans. That is more than 218 votes. So we think it can pass. And what Boehner is saying, rather than being Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, I will continue to be Speaker of the Republican Party, and I'm not going to allow that vote.
No, this is not good. Any further thoughts on the week? Or
well,
do
yeah.
Pick up
and
calls?
The other thought is, people are scratching their heads all over this country, not only at the idea of a government shutdown and all of the pain and dislocation and economic turmoil that brings, or the idea that for the first time in the history of the country we don't pay our bills, but people are wondering, they say, what are you guys doing? We have very, very high unemployment. Real unemployment today is close to 14%. Youth unemployment, higher than that. African-American youth unemployment, off the charts. And what they are saying is, go to work. Start creating the millions of jobs that we desperately need. They are saying that all over this country, you have millions of people working for $8 an hour, they're working for $9 an hour, they're working for $10 an hour. They are working for wages that cannot sustain individuals or a family. They're saying, raise the minimum wage to a living wage. They're talking about the fact that they can't afford to send their kids to college anymore because the cost of college is so high. What do we do about that? They're talking about pay equity so that women get a fair pay for their work, equal to men. So there are enormous issues out there. Global warming. I mean, every day you're seeing in the papers now, scientists are telling us that unless we get our act together and cut greenhouse gas emissions very significantly, this country is going to look radically different in 50, 75 years than it is right now. Much more inhospitable. Major cities perhaps underwater. We're not even talking about that issue. Mm. We're talking about whether or not the United States government pays its bills. So this is, I mean, you know, it is very frustrating. What I hope happens, and I think it is beginning to happen to some degree, is you're having the business community that has funded and supported the Republican Party for years coming in and saying, you know, you guys are nuts. Do you know what a default on our debt payment means to the economy? Do you understand that? Do you understand what shutting down the government means? So you got the business community leaning on. I think you have public anger focusing on more, you know, focusing on everybody, that's to be sure. But I think people understand that the real cause of this, most people understand, is the Republicans. Then you have Republican politicians where they're saying, hey, if we keep this thing up, are we going to retain control of the House in the next election? Or are the people going to be so disgusted with the Republicans that we'll lose it? So those factors, I think, bring us closer to a sane resolution to this.
Yeah, hopefully. I understand you can be with us just until 4:30. Is that right, Senator?
Yes.
Okay,
right.
Great. So we've got another 15 minutes. Bernie will pick up a few phone calls after this. So, we have calls on hold. We'll be back with your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders in our truncated day early version of Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, his newsletter, and it's a great source of all the news. And welcome back. Bob in Bridgewater, Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Tom. And Senator Sanders, I'm before Senator, you got on this program, Tom was talking about this being treason or sedition.
Well, I was saying let's not use those words. Let's back away from those words.
Right, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm calling it a sabotage of the democratic process. So, anyway, is it possible for democracy to survive in a situation where the minority refuses to accept the basic principle that majority rules?
Well, Bob, that is an excellent question, and you phrased it very, very well. We had an election, and the Republicans lost the election. You know, that happens. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. They lost the election. In fact, they lost the presidential election pretty big time. And they're saying, okay, well, we lost the election, but we want all the things that we campaigned on, that we were defeated on. And what this is about, and this is what I worry about, and Bob makes this point, and this is what he means by, I think, sabotaging democracy. If we were to give in to that, then people say, well, why does it matter who I vote for? Because the elections really don't matter. You're going to have a minority of people who will get their way by blackmailing the American people and holding the government hostage. What do elections matter? Do you live in a democratic society? So I think Bob is absolutely right. This is not about Obamacare or anything else or cutting Social Security or cutting Medicare. What this is about is, does democracy work, and do people have who won the election have a right to rule, or can the minority so disrupt the governmental process that they get their way?
Richard in Kingsland, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator. It is such a privilege to talk with you. I hold you in very high regard.
Thank you very much.
And a little, you bet, and a little plug for Wendy Davis for governor in Texas. Let's turn Texas blue. My question is, in this business of legislation and passing budgets for the country, my understanding is you have an authorization bill that authorizes whatever program or activity that you want to be conducted. And if it passes the House and the Senate and the President signs it, it becomes a law and then is incorporated in the budget for whatever expenditures are necessary in order to enforce that law. Why do we separate current revenues and budget and debt from the budget? Shouldn't all those programs be funded just flat, regardless of whether it's current revenues or debt that funds them?
In other words,
well,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Tom. What were you saying?
I said I think in other words, why the debt ceiling? But
that's exactly correct.
Bernie, can we pick up your answer on the other side of the break?
We're
hitting the music here. Well, Senator Sanders is with us. We will restate the question on the other side of the break, and we'll be right back. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Program. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. Our Brunch with Bernie half hour today, day early, and Senator Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, we just had a caller who asked, basically, why do we have the debt ceiling and why can't we just, you know, appropriate budgets and money and pay for things? And I'm
I think he makes a very good point. And what he is saying in English is that if you appropriate money, if you spend money, it goes without saying, and the Constitution tells us you got to pay those debts. So after you spend money, why are you having a great debate of about whether or not you should pay the debts that you have incurred because of the appropriation process? And Richard is right. I don't think that's worthy of debate. The debate should take place in terms of the budget process, the appropriations process. How much should we spend? How do you raise that money? That's a good debate. But once you appropriate that money and once you spend that money, there should not be a debate about whether the debt is paid.
Yeah. Okay. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I wanted to thank you for your speech Tuesday and apologize for my fellow idiot Alabamian and tell you that I envy my kid sister having you as a senator. She's in Putney. And ask you, how do you think we're going to solve this?
Well, Norma, first of all, thanks very much. Thanks for your thoughts. And let me just say something, Norma. You're in Alabama and your sister is in Vermont. You know what? We need you in Alabama and people throughout the South and people in conservative states. You guys are standing up, and we need you to stand up, and we need to help you nationally. Because the truth of the matter is, whether it's Alabama, Mississippi, Utah, wherever it may be, the majority of the people in every state in this country are working people, are middle-class people, are people who are struggling. And what we need to do is develop an agenda which speaks to the needs of those people. And I think if we do that, not only Richard talked a moment ago about winning in Texas, which I think is very doable. Frankly, I think it can be done in Alabama, and I think it can be done in the South as well. And I hope next week, if I can get out of here, to in fact be speaking in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, just delivering that message. How it ends, I think, is when the people of this country, and hopefully much sooner than later, make it very clear and Republicans understand, as they are beginning to. I mean, you're seeing it in the papers, where people are saying, you know, we continue going on like this. We're not going to continue to control the U.S. House of Representatives. Forget it. There's no way. You know, a few months ago, the Republicans were very cocky. They're going to take over the Senate. They're less cocky right now. And many of their graybeards, their old experts, are telling me, you're never going to win the White House if you continue to behave in this way. The business community is beginning to lean on these guys. So, you know, I just hope that people make it very clear that we can have differences of opinion about this issue, about that issue, about health care, about Social Security, whatever it may be. But you don't blackmail the American people. You don't hold this government hostage in order to get your way. And I think that message is getting out, Norma.
Gus, in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey there. My question is, you know, I believe the media plays a great big part in this because, you know, obviously the Republicans are banking on the fact that the American people are going to blame the Democrats and, you know, the Democrats vice versa. You know, if I'm tuning on the other side of the dial and I'm listening to Sean Hannity, he's saying the exact opposite of what Tom Hartman is saying. How come we can't have a dialogue in the media where these two opposing forces are exposed to each other on the air and so that the listener can make up their own mind? Instead, we have, you know, he said, she said on both sides, and they're diametrically opposed, and so many people end up so misinformed, you know, especially by the Fox viewing audience where they have these polls and surveys and find out, you know, these guys, you know, they don't know fact from fiction.
Well, Gus, I think you make a very good point. As I recall, Tom, there was a poll maybe a couple of years ago where they polled Fox people who were really extremely uninformed.
Yeah, Fox viewers were more misinformed about the actual news of the day
right.
than were people who did not read any newspapers or watch any news on television at all.
Right. And so Gus's point is well taken. I mean, the other issue that we have to worry about is that, you know, we take Tom Hartman for granted, and Tom does a great job. We have other progressive talk show hosts do a great job. They are in a tiny, tiny minority of talk show radio. Remind me again, Tom, what percentage of talk show hosts are right-wing?
Well, in terms of probably 5 or 10%.
Are progressive?
Yeah, are progressive. Yeah,
yeah, so over 90%. So, Gus, all over this country, you know, people are listening to Rush Limbaugh, they're listening to Sean Hannity, and we have got to do a better job, and people like Tom, I know, are working really hard at this, to get an alternative point of view out, a progressive point of view, which to my mind is the view that reflects the interests of the vast majority of the American people. The American people do not believe we should cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid to give more tax breaks to billionaires. They don't believe in trade policies which shut down factories in America and send their jobs to China. They don't believe that one out of four major corporations should be paying nothing in taxes. So I think we have a message that resonates, and our job is to just figure out how we get it out in all 50 states.
Yeah. We have a little less than a minute left to go, Bernie. Closing thoughts for the week?
Well, the closing thoughts are is that while we deal with this shutdown of the government and while we deal with the debt crisis, we have got to also remember that this country is in the midst of a major, major economic downturn. Real unemployment, 14%, as I said earlier. Real wages going down for millions and millions of people. The gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing wider. So we have got to stay focused on these economic issues and keep pushing, not just to maintain the Affordable Care Act, but even to go further, to guarantee health care to all of our people, to create the millions of jobs we need. So it's not just being defensive. We've got to get on the offensive and be proactive.
I so agree. Senator Sanders, thank you so much for being with us, Bernie.
My pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. And be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back. Senator Sherrod Brown is actually going to drop by in just a few minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And don't forget, Bernie's website is sanders.senate.gov. And also be sure to check out lasthours.org. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio at every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as TV on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. More people watch or listen to this program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive show in the world, which is fun. Dr. Joe Rahm is with us. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, the founding editor of Climate Progress. He has a PhD, a doctorate in physics from MIT. The website, thinkprogress.org, and click on that little green tab up at the top there that says Climate, and you can get his regular blogs along with a lot of other good people who work with him. Dr. Rahm, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here with us. This piece... as you know, in the last couple of days, I've been ranting about this little video that we just did about how we may be facing a methane problem, and it's possible that when the planets hit tipping points, those tipping points can cause things to change in rapid time periods. And I noticed just a few days ago you wrote this piece on the Permian Eocene Thermal Maximum, the PETM.
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
Well, a lot of scientists trying to figure out what's going to happen today with the increase in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have looked back through the paleoclimate history to find similar situations. In this case, obviously, it's humans are causing the emissions, but there are periods of time when there were rapid bursts of either carbon dioxide or methane, and one of those, which is considered a pretty good analogy for today, is this Paleo-Eocene Thermal Maximum, PETM, in which carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere doubled over a very short period of time. And scientists had thought that period of time was 10,000 years, which obviously isn't so short from our perspective, but from a geologic perspective, it's pretty fast.
Right.
But this new study suggests that it actually happened over a much shorter period of time, like 13 years. And that, you know, would be a blink of an eye from a geologic standpoint. The point is that when CO2 levels doubled 55 million years ago, the temperature warmed 9 degrees Fahrenheit and the ocean got very acidified from all the carbon dioxide that then went into the ocean. We are in the process of doubling CO2 emission levels ourselves by probably shortly after mid-century, and if we don't, we could stop that. I mean, we could take action to reduce carbon pollution and avoid that. We're actually headed towards a tripling or quadrupling of CO2 levels. So there's a great danger that we are headed similarly towards, you know, warming of the order of 9 degrees Fahrenheit, which would be, you know,
disastrous,
destructive.
Yeah, absolutely screaming disastrous. The analogy I've been using, and just, you know, people say, what, you know, oh, well, you know, the Earth has had these five mass extinctions, and the Earth has also had minor extinctions like the PETM. So what makes you think that, you know, human activity is going to cause something like this? And the metaphor that I've used is that in the previous mass extinctions, the crust of the Earth got breached, apparently four times by tectonic activity, continents rearranging themselves or mountains forming, once by a giant meteorite or a relatively large meteorite hitting the Earth and puncturing the Earth. And that releases enough principally carbon dioxide, but also fluorines and sulfides and sulfates and other greenhouse gases that it warms up the oceans and the world enough that in and of itself is an assault on life forms on Earth, on land, but then also it typically triggers a methane pulse, a methane release as methane clathrates begin to melt basically and go into the atmosphere, and then you have a secondary pulse of temperature. And what we're doing now, instead of the clumsy, like, you know, a meteorite striking the Earth, punching a hole, or the Siberian Traps erupting, or some giant volcanic activity, is we're doing it very sophisticated. We have searched the Earth for all these places where the carbon is. We found them, and we drill these little tiny holes into them, and we extract this carbon and then consume it in a way that throws it up into the atmosphere. What do you think of that as a metaphor, and can you riff on your thoughts on the process and the parallels between now and past times?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the point, it's absolutely right. I mean, you know, a long time ago, it is certainly true that you know, back in the PETM, when all this carbon got released before, the Arctic was actually you know, 18 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than anyone expected. It was like 74 degrees. I mean, the Arctic. So, you know, the point is that, and eventually all of the vegetation and such, you know, that the plant matter got put in the ground and through pressure turned into fossil fuels over a period of millions of years. We're now releasing all of that carbon, and the grave likelihood is that if we do, we're going to go back to a climate that we had long time ago. But, you know, humans made, you know, decisions about where to live and set up agriculture based on a climate that was pretty stable for the past 11,000 years. Really not much variation in temperature, maybe a few tenths of a degree Fahrenheit this way and that way. So, you know, when you raise the temperatures as high as we're going to, you are going to, you know, turn large areas that we now grow crops on into dust bowls, and you're going to raise sea levels steadily higher and higher. So, and obviously a great many people around the world and in this country live near the ocean. So you're going to have this situation where many billions of people are going to basically be living in the wrong place. But, you know, whereas temperature changes may have been more gradual in the past, or there, you know, there weren't any, you know, humans or you know, there were other species, they could migrate, but now you can't. You can't. The species can't migrate because there are human cities and roads and in the way. And humans are going to have a devil of a time finding someplace else to live because people live where they want to move to. So you know where. So that's just going to lead to conflict. And you know already we're seeing conflict in places that are drying out because of climate change. Places like the Middle East, in fact, Syria. Has seen the worst drought in history. There is simply no drought on record worse than the one Syria is now experiencing, and it has been attributed in large part to climate change, and it is one of the underlying causes, not the only cause, but one of the underlying causes of all the the
conflict there.
The conflict there, yeah.
I'm curious. We have about 2 minutes left. Nature just published, and I'm guessing you saw these two pieces. I was just reading them this morning. The one in particular said that you just do the simple math, given the rate that we're burning carbon, and assuming even that it levels off, and it's not, you know, in some parts of the world now, that by the year 2047 is going to be the new normal. And that new normal will be the same as the hottest year in recorded history, which was 2005, that's going to become the new baseline, the shifting baseline. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think people should realize that you know, as you start to warm the planet, you are basically adding the energy of global warming to existing weather systems. And so we see extreme weather events periodically that are kind of off the charts, whether it is that flood in Boulder, Colorado, or the drought that has been slamming so much of the country, or Hurricane Sandy. But eventually it gets so warm that, you know, the coldest year is hotter than the hottest year anyone's ever experienced in the past century. So, you know, that's kind of scary because it just means you have a completely different climate. The extreme weather is just, you won't call it extreme weather anymore. That'll just be the normal climate. So, yeah, people should be very worried. And now the good news is that the 2047 is a long way away, and if we act, you know, now, you know, we have some serious chance of minimizing that. But otherwise, we're just going to leave our children and grandchildren a utterly different climate. Like I said, one that where there'll be 9 billion people in 2047, and half of them, you know, are basically going to be living in the wrong place. And I just don't know where they're going to move to, how they're going to get food. It's going to be the great challenge of humanity.
Yeah, we need to leapfrog 19th and 20th century carbon cycling fuel systems and right into the 21st century. Go straight to renewable. It seems the only way to do it. Dr. Joe Rahm, thinkprogress.org, the climate progress. Click that little green tab there. Check it out. Dr. Rahm, thanks for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Good talking. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Be sure to check out Joe Rahm's blog over at thinkprogress.org. It's brilliant. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in a few moments, we will be doing talk radio news. And then at the top of the third hour, David Selig is going to drop by. And then Zita Andrews, who is organizing this truckers protest, and then at 5:30, Senator Sherrod Brown, 5:30 Eastern Time, Senator Sherrod Brown is going to be with us. So a lot of interesting stuff coming up. Lynn in Castro Valley, California, watching on Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Big, big, big fan. Thank you so much, and thanks so much for all the great people you have on your show.
Thank you.
Big fan of Bernie. And Tom, I really want to address very poignantly this Republican minority and its highly disruptive agenda. And I'd like to differ with you just a little bit with regard to you labeling their actions simply bad politics. I think that liberals, progressives are the enlightened nice guys who are finishing last. It's time that we confront the reality that these people do not share our values, and it's time that we have a more aggressive campaign to reveal the truth about their destructive agenda. They have a nice posturing that says they're the constitutionalists, they're the patriots, and in fact, it's time we say what they are, and that is that they don't care about our laws, our system of laws. We have three branches of government who collaborate in the creation of law. Once you create a law, then you move on from there, and you have a systematic way of changing that if you so choose. They are completely opposed to that and ignore that process. They don't care. They have their own agenda. That is anti-constitutional. Anti-constitutional. It's time we start to say that.
And anti-American.
It is anti-American, and it's time. This is not about name throwing. It's about being as clear as we can be about what works and what doesn't work. And we need to take a little bit out of the Ronald Reagan playbook. He was really clear and aggressively stood his ground. In his case, something against we would slightly oppose, but the point is how he took a powerful stand with regard to the air traffic controllers. No one questioned that Reagan was in charge. But we are so nice guys, we are so compromising, we so take the high road that we don't take on the truly dangerous forces who, yes, indeed, are pathological liars. These people don't care about Obamacare. They care about destroying whatever positive is going on behalf of the American people and for the good of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, they are so sociopathic. And until such time as we tell the truth about it and begin to pursue legal accountability, we have a minority that are anarchists, and in fact, if they had their way, would be dictatorial, part of the dictatorial aristocracy.
I do not disagree. I do not disagree. Thank you, Lynn, for the call. And this is where I wish that the Democrats, instead of saying, okay, let's talk about your agenda, Republicans, I wish that the Democrats would say, hey, let's talk about national health care. Let's talk about dropping the Medicare age eligibility age to zero. Let's talk about reducing the Social Security retirement age to 55. Let's talk about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Let's do some serious stuff here. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service to find out what's going on in the world today. The Talk Radio News, of course, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a recently rescued slave and get a picture of the goat and the person that you helped, a photo probably taken by Ellen herself, as this is.
I just came back a week ago Tuesday, so yeah, lots of new photos, and I was on the ground taking the photos.
That's great. By the way, you were in Gokmachar?
Yeah.
So you were in the same place where you and I were a couple
exactly.
of years ago, and that's just a stone's throw from the Darfur border.
Oh, that's
What's it like there right now?
Well, you know, our governor has kept things very, very cool. He has very good relationships with the North because the North wants to come down and graze their cows. So it's probably one of the safest places in Africa right now,
wow.
although the rest of the area is not very safe at all.
Yeah, remarkable. Okay.
Yeah, so amazing. Just a couple quick things. One, you asked me to see that video. I did. And then today in the New York Times and the Washington Post, there were two articles that completely back up what you've said in the video about global warming. I'm just out of the blue. Two different articles today. Amazing.
Yeah, it's the video that Ellen is referring to is over at lasthours.org. We've built a website around it. It's a little 10-minute documentary that we put together that was produced by George DiCaprio and Earl Katz, and that I wrote and narrated.
It's an amazing video, and when you see it, because I think you explain it, I hate to say it, better than Al Gore, but of course, you're Dr. Tom Hartman, so...
Well, no, Al Gore has endorsed our video.
Well, I understand, but you do a better job at explaining.
Oh, you know,
that's all I want to say.
Okay,
before we get into the news of all the shutdown, two other quick things. The China report, not very good on human rights, came out by two of my favorite people in Congress, Senator Sherrod Brown from the great state of Ohio, Democrat, and Republican Chris Smith of New Jersey. Both do very, very good work, even though they're different on social issues and financial issues. But it's not pretty when you read what's going
on
with China.
Sherrod Brown will be with us in about 15 minutes.
Oh, just say hello to him for me,
my
dear buddy.
Yeah.
And a death penalty report just came out from the Center for Constitutional Rights. That's my brother Michael Ratner's organization. And believe it or not, I always hate Texas the most because of the death penalty. But after reading this report, certainly how they treat people, how they put people on death row, etc., they don't kill as many people. But California is the worst.
And Jerry Brown should damn well do something about it now.
Well, he's not about
to. I don't understand why he doesn't. You know, Governor Moonbeam, I always thought he was a good progressive.
I did too. Well, you know, and then when he was a talk show host, he came and did a program from the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And after seeing him in operation for a few hours, I said, he's not my guy.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Okay. So now let's talk about the government shutdown. It does look like they are going to come up with a temporary deal for a lifting of the debt ceiling. So that is definitely probably going to happen, and probably going to happen over the next few days. The president is meeting with the Republican leadership from the House today, Senate tomorrow. So that's going to happen. However, the rhetoric from the White House, although I don't disagree with it, is basically that they are not going to be held hostage, and the government is still going to remain shut down.
Now, this is because John Boehner won't hold a vote in the House of Representatives.
Well, because if you look at the vote, they need 218 votes to make this happen. 200 votes they've got, because they got every Democrat. So now all they need to do is peel off 18 votes. And Boehner knows that. And he knows they've got the votes. And the White House knows they have the votes.
Right. There are 18 Republicans who are willing to vote for this. So it's really the only thing, the one human being on earth who is keeping the United States government shut down is John Boehner, because he refuses to. He has the power to put a vote before the House.
He wants to be Speaker at any cost.
It's amazing.
Right.
So basically what he is offering is, we'll give up one hostage, but we're going to keep the other. And the president is saying, if you give up one hostage, but you keep the other, I'm still not going to negotiate with you, because I don't negotiate with hostage takers. Let go of both the hostages, then we can sit down and talk.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So let me just say something else. A couple other interesting things. Today there was a Senate banking hearing. Elizabeth Warren, who a lot of people think is going to be vice presidential nominee, if not a presidential nominee, if Hillary Clinton doesn't run.
I'd vote for her in a heartbeat.
Yes, so would I. She said the U.S. default is the equivalent of a nuclear bomb. She said accountability is closing loopholes. That they Republicans are always talking about accountability, but she's saying it's closing tax loopholes. Chuck Schumer was talking about this, and he said the debt ceiling deniers include Congressman Paul Brown, who's a medical doctor, who said a third of what he learned in medical school was lies. He said, this is the kind of person we're listening to. I mean, that's what he said. Then he quoted Jack Lew, who, as you know, is the Treasury Secretary. He said, prioritization is a default with another name.
Right.
It's
a slow motion default.
He also said, Chuck Schumer came out very strongly. And by the way, I think there might be a leadership fight between him and Dick Durbin if Harry Reid goes. This would be kind of interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. My bet is with Schumer.
I would bet that, too, as much as I would probably prefer Dick Durbin.
Well,
I think they're both good guys.
Yeah, all right. There's some pros and cons of each.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But Schumer also said middle class incomes are declining, and if that continue, it's worse than the debt load.
That's true, because as the middle class incomes decline, the middle class tax base goes down.
Exactly.
Which is the largest.
It would
chunk
be a disaster for this country.
Government.
A disaster in terms of consumer products, everything.
Yeah.
Then the Senate Finance Committee had Jack Lew, who's the Treasury Secretary, and he talked about what would happen if U.S. bondholders decided they wanted to be repaid rather than continuing to roll over their Treasury balance. He was very clear about that. He said that his agency is not able to prioritize certain payments or obligations over others. And that's another one. Also today, a government shutdown on national parks. 7 million people. They took a statistics from 2012, and then they said what would happen. 7 million people have been blocked from visiting national parks.
Ouch. So you've got 7 million really upset people.
You have 7 million really upset people who are planning their vacations.
Right, and you've got vendors who would have been selling to those 7 million people. I took an Uber car today, and the driver who picked me up was a White House chef. And he said a bunch of his friends, they've all been furloughed, and he said a bunch of his friends are just like sitting down at the bar drinking. He says, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get some work here. But it was amazing. The shutdown, it's just really hitting this town. Anyhow, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Go to theoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com. And our website, tomhartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Day 10 of the hostage crisis, the government hostage crisis. And I am appointing myself as hostage negotiator. David Selig is on the line, conservative commentator and pro-business advocate, founder and president of Selig & Associates. TrueTaxHelp.com is the website.
David Selig, you have the hostages. Will you bring them out?
I will not.
What is it going to take for you to release the hostages?
Well, we're going to have to compromise and come to the table, Tom. Right now, your side is being intransigent.
But that's because we don't do... Excuse me. Go ahead.
I think we need a little reasonableness on the side of the Democrats. We're going to have to come to the table, no?
But we don't negotiate with hostage takers.
Well, we're not taking anyone hostage, Tom. We're just trying to reconcile a problem.
What about those children who aren't in cancer trials? What about the nuclear power plants that aren't being inspected? Don't we have hostages?
I don't know about all that. That seems a little dramatic, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, actually.
All right.
I had a driver this morning, an Uber driver. It's kind of a little entrepreneurial thing where you can, you know, be your own taxi driver, and they've got a little app for it. I think you know about Uber. They have it in Chicago, too. And they've got this Uber X now that's even cheaper than cabs. And I had to get over here really quick, and it was raining like crazy. And so instead of running to the subway, I called Uber. And he was a White House chef. It's like,
okay,
you know, these guys are furloughed. And he's like, you know, you wouldn't believe the number of people in this town who have, you know, who are furloughed. And they've burned through their vacation pay. They've burned through their sick pay. They're running on fumes. They're not going to be able to make their mortgage payments. He said, you know, some of these guys are sitting in the bar drinking way too much. It's just
not
good.
I'm not going to shed a bitter tear over the federal employees who are out presently, you know. It's a little too much.
Well, it's not just federal employees. We had a woman call earlier whose daughter works for a private corporation, a for-profit corporation that is a contractor to the federal government, and they're laying off their people.
There's an assumption of risk. You take the job, you take the rough with the smooth. These individuals are experiencing a little rough. You know,
but what about the women and infants and children program, David? What about lactating? What about breastfeeding mothers and mothers who have just recently stopped breastfeeding and are feeding their young babies, particularly the ones who are at risk. This is what WIC is designed for. They're being cut off.
Yeah, you make a good point. They should not be solely dependent upon WIC and governmental handouts. That's why the private sector needs to step in. Unfortunately, this administration has been so antagonistic towards the private sector, it has stultified growth and efforts. It's just as
when
right
in the history of America has the private sector solved the problem of poverty?
Well, I don't think anyone can solve the problem of poverty.
Lyndon Johnson cut poverty in half with the Great Society.
It goes back all the way to Jesus Christ.
No, no, David, seriously, when Franklin Roosevelt put Social Security into place, he cut poverty among people over 65 more than in half, and Lyndon Johnson cut poverty among all people in the United States in half, in more than in half. It took about 6 years to happen altogether. FDR did it in less than 3 years.
Well, you know, I had real grandiose expectations of this president. I thought he was going to surpass both of those people, but he didn't. He failed.
Well, he didn't. He has not been the progressive savior that many of us hoped for. But then I think that
sure.
If FDR had reincarnated himself, he still wouldn't be able to deal with John Boehner. I mean, we're in the midst of a hostage crisis right now.
The problem is he just refuses to speak or negotiate or do really anything.
You don't negotiate with hostage takers.
It's been disastrous. You know, I thought when this man took office that a new day was dawning on the country. I thought you were about to get your way on almost everything.
Do you seriously, David, do you seriously think that...
Your base.
Do you seriously think that look at history. When PATCO went out on strike, Ronald Reagan and then said, you know, we're on strike. Now let's start negotiating. And Reagan said, I don't negotiate with people who go on strike. You're fired.
Yeah, he did. He did a great job with that. But
okay, so Obama's doing the exact same thing right now with John Boehner. Why are you upset about it?
No. Well, wait a minute. There was a backup plan. Remember, when the air traffic controllers went out, Reagan replaced them with military and veterans, and we didn't miss a beat. This guy has just allowed everything to grind to a halt, and that's not right, Tom.
Yeah, I agree. This guy, John Boehner, is really making this happen. And he has, actually, enough votes. There are enough Republican votes in the House of Representatives to turn the government back on, and John Boehner refuses to allow them to have that vote because he's afraid that the Tea Party will then revolt against him and he'll lose the job as Speaker of the House. That's what this is all about.
Know.
This is all about John Boehner's vanity.
No, I don't think that's true, Tom.
Well, then what is true? Are you saying that it's not true that there are more than 17 Republicans who are willing to vote for a clean, continuing resolution?
Well, I don't know how they'll vote until they have.
There are 22 who are on the record right now saying that they will vote for clean CR.
The terms of a vote to say, I insist it be done my way or the highway, and that has been the position that unfortunately both sides have taken.
No, excuse me, David. What the president is saying is to John Boehner is, John Boehner, it's your way or the highway. The continuing resolution that Harry Reid and the Democrats and the president sent to the House of Representatives is using the numbers that came from the Republican budget. It's got the sequester in it when John Boehner said this, Shano. Oh, no,
and
I should.
When you look at this final agreement that we came to with the White House, you know, I got 98% of what I wanted. I'm pretty happy.
Those are the numbers, the sequester numbers. Those are the numbers that the Senate passed to the House. And Boehner, a month and a half ago, had told Harry Reid, send me a clean continuing resolution that includes the sequester. I'll sign it. I think Harry Reid should now be saying, okay, we're going to send you another continuing resolution. This one doesn't have the sequester in it. We're going to unsequester all these funds, put people back to work, and re-stimulate the economy. Of course, then John Boehner wouldn't vote on that one either, but, you know. That's just
Tom, you make a good point. I got to tell you, I cannot argue with that type of logic. But, you know, it is not a this side and that side matter. The fact of the matter, and I believe many people in your listening audience presently know, that there's a lot of blame to go around. And unfortunately, the American taxpayer is the person who is really suffering. And even the American that is not the taxpayer, those welfare individuals, the ones who are rightfully honored.
You mean like Boeing and ADM and you know, all those big corporations that are getting ExxonMobil, the oil subsidies, the grain subsidies, the military industrial complex.
About something else.
Well, the real welfare
Nancy
queens.
Pelosi
they're suffering.
Had an illegal immigrant rally. It has nothing to do with the issue.
Okay. All right. So
when are you going to release the hostages?
Immediately, as long as you're willing to be reasonable, we can come to terms. Tom,
what does be reasonable mean?
You know we could resolve this in an hour.
What does be reasonable mean? You mean if we roll back the 2012 election?
No one's asking for that.
Well, the Democrats won. The Republicans lost seats in the House. They lost seats in the Senate. They lost the White House. Why don't the Democrats get to do what they want to do? They won the election.
Well, you mean you want your party to just be able to do whatever they want?
All the Democrats are asking to do is to do what John Boehner said he wanted done when he said.
Yes.
And when you look at this final agreement that we came to with the White House, you know, I got 98% of what I wanted. I'm pretty happy.
That's okay. What the Democrats are. The Democrats want to do what the Republicans wanted.
Well,
John Boehner won't let them.
Because
the Tea Party has said we
want
to change the rules of the game.
You see, I'm not following that. If we're going to set it aside and do what, let's say, you know, right now, if you were to accept that and say we should be able to do whatever we want, that's fine as long as it accords with what you want. The problem is what if it no longer accords with what you want?
Well, that's the problem. The Tea Party has said we're going to move the goalposts. David Selig, TrueTaxHelp.com. Thank you, David.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Good talking to you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Senator Sherrod Brown is going to be with us in the next hour. Zeta Andrews coming up next. They're organizing truckers for the Constitution. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Michael in Benton Harbor, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to just bring up one point, and that is that, you know, we keep talking about the two different players that are basically controlling the Republican Party. You know, you have the Koch brothers and you have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that put all these people in office. And, of course, there's the Wall Street banksters. My whole point here that I called about was that MSNBC was doing a report about how that in the 2011 debt ceiling crisis, it cost our government $17 billion in higher Treasury notes. And today, even right now, the Treasury is having to raise its rates on short-term T-notes just because of the speculation of a debt ceiling crisis.
Right.
My whole point here is that there is a group of people, the Wall Street banksters, who are betting against us again.
Of course they are.
On a temporary shutdown. They're going to sabotage us in order for them to profit hugely.
Of course they
will. On a temporary shutdown.
That's what banksters do.
And
look it up in the dictionary.
Being exposed for the cockroaches that they are.
Yeah.
These people are going to profit from this speculation.
Oh, it's just like in 2008 they profited from cornering the market on food and creating food riots around the world and you know millions of people were rioting and thousands of people died and the banksters made a fortune. Goldman Sachs in particular, it was Goldman Sachs that led that charge. Matt Taibbi documented that brilliantly.
Be surprised that they're not, you know, you would think that Wall Street would be telling these people to get in line and don't play with the debt ceiling. But that's not the case. They're not stepping up yet.
No, Wall Street makes money from, Wall Street makes money on the churn. They don't make money on markets going up or markets going down. They make money on markets moving fast. Every time there's a trade, Wall Street makes money. And so if they can create a crisis, a good crisis, a bad crisis, it doesn't matter. As long as it moves something, stocks or bonds in a significant direction, they make money. When they don't make money is when everything is stable. They don't like stability.
Exactly. And you see right now that they're talking about having this new debt ceiling crisis come back again in another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
As long as that you don't actually destroy the country, you just threaten to. There's a huge amount of money. When they said $17 billion, I think that was like a trial bubble. I think they could be pulling in hundreds of billions off of this.
Oh, sure, especially if they start selling derivatives based on treasuries, which they probably are already doing in gray markets that we don't know about.
Yeah, I think that the Republican Party has, you know, with these three distinct drivers that are pushing everything with the Koch brothers and the Chamber of Commerce and then the banksters, I mean, you see the destruction that's coming. Mm-hmm. And everyone is scared out of their mind. And the more people are scared, the more money that Wall Street is going to extract from us.
Yeah.
On this basically guaranteed moneymaker, because no one's going to allow everything to collapse. So it's a win-win for them.
Yeah.
The more often they can do this, the more often that they get huge profits out of fear.
Yeah, my point. And the bank stocks are probably going up right now. I haven't looked recently. But we'll see how it all plays out, Michael. Thank you for the call. I share your cynicism about the banks. Cynicism is not quite the right word, but disgust, whatever. Anyway, we'll be right back. Think about this. If you are standing in the midst of an extinction, is it possible you could be completely unaware of it? Underground, underwater, and below the ice, a time bomb is ticking. Scientists are seeing the evidence. Runaway climate change could be closer than we think. Go to lasthours.org and share the video with your friends now to help get this important message out right away. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Julie, listening on AM 760 in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Julie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for everything that you do. I really appreciate it. And there was a caller, what was her name? She was from California, and I couldn't agree with her more. I think that, the extremist Tea Party people have proven to us again and again that they have no regard for the law, and they just count on us playing by the rules, and then they don't play by the rules. And I think it's time to move to the next level. What kind of law are we going to produce in response to their radical doings, I mean, revolutionary things that have never happened before, things like, closing down the government, not paying our debts, that's a new level.
They want to undo the child labor laws. I mean, I'm not making this up. I mean, this is a serious Tea Party proposal. Undo the child labor laws. Basically, roll back America to 1880, even before that, arguably. And I think what is going to happen, Julie, is as increasingly the friendly smiling mask is sliding off the face of the Tea Party, and people are seeing what's really behind that mask, that people are increasingly horrified by it. And the election of 2014, this is how we have revolutions in this country. We have them in the ballot box. We have them in the polling places. There's a reason why the governor of Virginia right now is trying to knock tens of thousands of people off the voting rolls, because Ken Cuccinelli, the Republican who's running, is trailing Terry McAuliffe way behind. And so what does the Republican Party do? What's their answer? Let's stop people from voting. I mean, there's a reason why they are engaging in these desperate tactics, these voter suppression laws all across the United States. And the reason is that they're losing. They know that they're losing. In a fair fight, they would always lose. And they're hysterical about it. And frankly, I think they're going to lose big in 2014 and even worse in 2016. Julie, thanks for the call. Marty in Evergreen Park, listening on WCPT. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Tom. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to throw this out there, because you had a guest on the Big Picture in the Lone Liberal Rumble yesterday who was basically saying, oh, everybody has an ID, and was challenging the statistics that you threw out there. And I just wanted to throw out that even though I am not in a state that has voter ID laws, last year I was in a position where I had to renew both my state ID and driver's license. And I had to get a reprint of my birth certificate and show proof of residency in order to obtain the two forms of ID, and come out of pocket almost $50, which was a hit, to our budget, which is always extremely tight. But to insinuate that everybody has valid IDs and that getting an updated ID is like a walk, down to the grocery store, and that you can do it just like that is ludicrous, because that's not what really happens. That's not how you get a government photo ID. It's not something that they just hand out to people arbitrarily. It's something that you need to go through a process in order to obtain. And I don't think people really appreciate that, you know, when they're talking about these voter ID laws. It's not, you know, it's not just preventing people from voting twice or whatever ridiculous allegations they're throwing out there, but it's really a process for some people to get their IDs updated, and it's not something that's...
It is, and what's most insidious, Marty, is when they do these voter purges like they're trying to do in Virginia right now, they use lists like down in Florida before the 2000 election, Jeb Bush used a list of Texas felons to purge Florida's voter rolls. And so it hit mostly common African-American names, and they knocked 60,000-70,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls so that George Bush could claim a 500-vote victory in the state and win the presidency. They're trying to do the same thing in Virginia now. They did it in Colorado. They did it in Pennsylvania. Wherever you've got Republicans in control of state houses or state governorships, they're trying to do this. And it's just plain old flat-out wrong. There are elderly people who don't have ID. There are poor people who don't have ID. People who live in cities who don't need. I mean, you know, they don't own a car. They've never driven. They may have an ID that's sufficient to get to function in life. You know, what they basically need, a student ID, for example, or something like that. But in many states, will say no, you can't use a student ID. You know, in Texas, you can't use a student ID, but you can use a gun permit. Really? I mean, it's crazy. Marty, thank you for calling and pointing that out. I appreciate it. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? I don't think you should apologize for calling Boehner a killer. The Republicans have always been the pro-death party. They start needless wars that kill thousands of Americans. They cut hungry kids off school lunches and Medicaid. They want to stop Obamacare and take us back to the insurance company death panels that were literally killing 40,000 people a year before Obamacare saved us. They always want to cut Social Security and Medicare and force seniors to choose between food and medicine. Okay, that kills people. You know, I mean, they literally kill people.
You know, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. My point in apologizing for calling John Boehner specifically a killer is that I think he's just a bad politician. I don't increasing. You know, I've really been thinking about this ever since I went off on it. And I was just remembering my almost son-in-law. You know, and it really, really got me upset. I just don't think that language is going to move things ahead. As much as it may stir up the base or it may excite people who think the same way I do, at the end of the day, we have to reach people who don't always think the way we do, who sometimes do, but don't always do, that middle ground. And I think that kind of language doesn't do that. Thank you,
Paul. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Indeed, and at TomHartman.com, you can drop by and drop into our free live chat room, hang out with some of the finest minds in the world. 28 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and the Senator Sherrod Brown on the line with us, United States Senator representing the great state of Ohio, brown.senate.gov, the website, and sherrodbrown.com as well. Senator Brown, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back. Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. So I understand that we are in day 10 of a hostage crisis here, and that the John Boehner, who is refusing to bring this vote to the floor for fear of losing his speakership, because the Republicans will actually vote against him and pass a continuing resolution, put people back to work, that he has offered to give up one hostage of the two that he's threatening. He's taken one hostage, the American people. He's threatening to take a second, and now he's saying he's going to give up on that second hostage for a short try. Tell me what's going on here.
None of this is really clear, except that your assertion is probably not provable, but almost certain that if he were to bring it up, Number one, it would pass because he would, we're pretty certain at least 25 Republicans would join the Democrats, and maybe 30 Republicans, maybe more than that as the numbers grow.
Peter King said it could be 50 to 100.
Yeah, could be just sort of a critical mass is reached, then they start cascading. If right-wing Republicans can cascade, that's a verb I could use. but the other thing that you said that I think is true, and again, it's not provable, is that it would be the end of Boehner's speakership, not immediately, but serving through the end of 14. There are rumors already in Ohio that Boehner's not going to run again. Those are nothing's proven. I just hear them from time to time. From Republicans more than I hear from Democrats that way in my state. So that's not any newsflash. I don't know that, but I hear that.
Well, there's a lot to be said for going out on a high note.
Well, I think that's right, and I think he may be tired of this. I mean, I can't imagine his job now. I mean, I can't imagine what the President of the United States goes through every day either. But I can't imagine the Speaker of the House. He's the most powerful Republican in Washington. I think that's in the country, probably, except the CEOs of every major Wall Street firm. But, he is also a very difficult job because he helped to create this monster of this far right Tea Party crowd and has benefited from him by his elevation to being the leader of the majority party. But it's coming around and biting him, too. And
well, the metaphor I've been using is he's the dog that caught the car.
Yeah, and that's a good way. He's the dog that caught the car. What do I do now? Yeah.
Right.
And, he's a very conservative guy, but he's generally a responsible guy. He comes from my state. I've known him not particularly intimately, but known him for two decades. But as I said, a very conservative guy. He's kind of an ideologue, but he's not an ideologue like the Tea Party. And he wants government to actually work. I mean, he doesn't believe government's a very good thing, but he's not so hostile that he believes all government, almost by definition, is a bad thing.
Hmm. Interesting. So by the way, Ellen Ratner was here doing the newscast, and she asked me to give you her very, very best.
Thank you.
And she just lit up when I said you were coming in the program.
Cool.
And she said that you just issued a report with a Republican senator about human rights around the world.
Yeah, but very just what's happening in China. Again, I mean, China is the group called the Freedom Center, did a report ranking China above Iran, only Iran in terms of freedoms and human rights. And I'm co-chair with Congressman Chris Smith from New Jersey, House member on the China Commission. Mm. And we interview people a lot on what's happened in Chinese prisons, what's happened with religious freedom, and what. I always insist in talking about when you talk about China and, I from one country preaching to people in another country about their country is that frankly, what U.S. companies have done to enable much of this to happen, is also something we should address. And I mean, our trade policy with China costs us huge number of manufacturing jobs. It also helps a bunch of thugs who run the Chinese government. Who have committed terrible human rights atrocities on many levels. It helps them stay in power and them control their people more. And that whether that's part of written reports or to speak about it when it happens is central to this in my mind.
Yeah, yeah. It's a extraordinary times we live in.
Yeah, we
truly extraordinary
certainly
times.
Do.
What do you see as the biggest issues facing this country right now, Senator Brown?
Well, I mean, it's jobs and it's decent paid jobs. I just see, and I know you've talked about this a lot on your show, Tom, and we have too sometimes, the chasm between most of America and the very wealthy and how that's growing month by month, year by year. This economic recovery of the last 3 years has gone overwhelming. I mean, it's helped manufacturing some. We're getting some of those jobs back, but it's helped. The overwhelming part of those gains have gone to a very tiny sliver of people, and that's because of it's for a lot of reasons. It's because of the decline of unions. It's because of loss of manufacturing jobs and emphasis on financial services at the expense of manufacturing. It's tax cuts. It's shredding the safety net. It's all those things that we as a country once stood for. And you look at, from World War II
into the 70s. As workers got more productive, profits were solid, but the workers really shared and almost paralleled their productivity. So as they were more productive, they were seeing those similar kinds of wage gains. Since the 70s, and particularly since the 90s, since the end of the decade before this, since 2000, there's been such a decoupling. Profits continue to go up. Executive salaries just jump, explode, and workers' pay has been decoupled. And part of that's government policy. Part of that is a decline of unionization. And that's the most important thing we can address in my mind.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree. I think you're right. I'm curious. I've had a couple of people call in about this, and it's something that I've been scratching my head on. The Republicans, even when they're out of power, like right now, the Republicans keep putting forward proposals, right? They say, we want this, you know, defund Obamacare, cut back on WIC, screw food stamps, you know, whatever. They keep throwing things out. Why is the Democratic Party not putting out their wish list on a regular and loud basis? Why is the Democratic Party not saying, roll back the Reagan tax cuts? Let's change our trade policy. Let's create a national manufacturing policy. Let's move forward on immigration reform. Let's, raise the cap on Social Security so the program is fully funded. Let's tighten up Medicare so that people don't have to buy insurance policies from private corporations to fill in the holes. Let's undrill those holes Republicans have drilled over the last 30 years of Medicare. Just stuff like that. I mean, simple stuff.
That's a puzzle to me. I mean, some of us try that. Probably don't do it loudly enough or persistently enough, but that's a puzzle to me. It's why there's more passion on their side. The Tea Party has more passion than progressives do, it seems, and at least from media coverage, maybe not, but and in Congress. And I don't really understand why that's the case. I wish I had a better answer, but there is a drumbeat from them that just keeps going.
They're funded by billionaires and we're not.
That's only an excuse because there are more of us than there are them. More of us, meaning more people that benefit from all the things you said, from Medicare to a better environment to a safer food supply to safe drinking water, to all the things that Social Security, all the things that we as a nation really stood for. And we were able over the decades to get our government to do those things because of the passion from progressives and the labor movement. And I'm not sure why we don't have that passion now the way we did.
I think people are wiped out. They've 32 years of Reaganomics has wiped people out. They're so busy just trying to work that third job.
I mean, it's amazing in many ways that people haven't demonstrated more and spoken out more. I mean, you saw that with Occupy Wall Street, that there was a moment for that, but it seemed, in retrospect, it seemed only a moment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It partly didn't have a coherent strategy or message other than here's who we are, but not here's what we stand for. That wasn't clear to me, and I mean, I don't fault them. I just think social movements are hard that way. And I'd also say, Tom, and you and I have talked about this, that in the last 100 years, there have been three or four bursts of progressive energy in the Wilson years, in the teens, and then in the 30s with Roosevelt, 3 or 4 years, 3 years with LBJ, 64, 5, and 6, and then 09 and 10 with President Obama, where we've had huge accomplishments for the country. People have benefited for decades, but then there's a more of a status quo counter reaction. So we play defense to hold the gains. And Emerson said there's an ongoing fight between innovators and conservators, and the innovator periods are great energy and don't last very long, but people benefit for decades from them. And then we've got to make sure the conservatives don't roll back those things. We've done it. We've done that pretty well. I mean, they're after Obamacare already, but in the end, they don't like Medicare. They don't like Social Security. Every time they've had a chance, those major two pillars of social insurance, they've tried to take them down. And now that's why they are so angry about Obamacare, because instead of weakening Social Security and Medicare, which they've had some success in doing since the Reagan years, there's now a new one and we're winning on that. And that's what bothers them so much, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and that those bursts of progressive energy, we need to fire another one up.
Yeah, we do. We absolutely.
And you're one of the guys who's out there doing it. Senator, on a regular basis, Senator Sherrod Brown, one of the true champions in the United States Senate.
We'll be back. We'll do it again.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being with us. Brown.senate.gov. Check it out. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Excuse me. We'll be right back with more of your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Sherry in Portsmouth, Ohio. Hey, Sherry, what's up?
Hey, I am so glad that I dropped my remote and I hit your... Somehow it fell onto your channel, and this is my first time viewing you. So
wow.
I'm so happy I found it.
Okay. Write down that channel number.
Yeah, it was by accident, but thank God I found it. I was just glad that Sherrod Brown, me being a voter from Ohio, he was sort of kind of bringing himself a little too close to the evil man. And I was worried about that. I want Sherrod, I'm a big fan of Sherrod. I want him to remember that we are voters here in Ohio. And I do disagree with the Head Start program being taken away. I worked there for 25 years.
Mm.
The clinics and the WIC, they're all associated together. These 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds that a lot of them are being raised by single mothers who are working minimum wage jobs. These kids are being fed at Head Start. And at the end of the day, they would cry for their extra snack because they knew they weren't getting anything when they would go home at night. And they knew that was all they were going to get to eat for that day. And that was at 3 o'clock. So they knew the evening they weren't getting anything else because there was nothing else there for them to eat. And then also, then you get the free clinic taken away. Well, at Head Start, the only way that the 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds, which is set up to prepare these children for kindergarten, that's the way they get their teeth cleaned, their teeth checked. They are taken to get their immunizations for nothing, for free, you know, and then to take the WIC away, you know, and Salig, to have him on there, I wanted him off of there so fast I couldn't stand it for him to be on there. Has he ever had a child go through Head Start? We would prepare them for kindergarten, take them on the field trips to which school they would be going to. 80% of the kindergarten teachers would tell us that the children that came from Head Start at 5 and 6 years old when they were ready to come, they were the best one. They were more prepared than any of the other children that came to the school. And they were quick learners because they had been there at Head Start since they were 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what was expected of them. And to take a program like that or to take WIC away from these mothers, and this guy saying that Salig said, oh, they need to stop relying on the federal government. Are you kidding me? Let him go to a job that doesn't give you full time, gives you part time, make minimum wage and support your children. Has he ever had to do that? Let the senators go work for a year at a minimum wage job that gives you no insurance. You know.
Well said, Sherry. Sherry, we're out of time for the segment, but thank you for your call. It's your impassioned call, and it's a true call to action. Great to hear. We'll be right back. Sesquipedalianly ugly, the good, The Pittsburgh Steelers, unlike congressional Republicans, the NFL team has decided to help promote the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Today, the Steelers ownership team hosted an event at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh to raise awareness about the law's insurance exchanges, which opened last week. The NFL itself has decided not to help out with the Obamacare outreach effort, but the Steelers are now the second NFL team to join up with the Obama administration to promote the new health care law. Their divisional rivals, the Baltimore Ravens, were the first. Way to go, Steelers. Way to go. The bad. WKMG. Earlier this week, the Florida TV station aired what was supposed to be a shocking report on how credit scores could affect the premium rates of customers shopping on the Obamacare insurance exchanges. Check it out.
More families are looking for insurance options through the new Affordable Care Act. They are finding out their credit score will have a big impact on how much they pay. Local 6's Lewis Bolden joins us live now. And Lewis, a lot of people want to know why credit scores are determining how much they pay.
Well, they say it was explained to us like this. It's like buying a house or a car. Your credit score and other factors can determine your interest rate. In this case, it can determine how much you pay in premiums.
This is actually incredibly misleading and false. While Obamacare exchanges do ask for your credit score, they don't use it to calculate premium rates. Doing so would actually go against the entire point of the law in the first place, to help struggling people, people who don't have the best financial history, buy health insurance. WKMG has since retracted its misleading report, but when you consider all the lies Republicans are spreading about Obamacare these days, the fact that a so-called news station would so casually fudge the facts, it's just really disturbing. And the very, very ugly Greg Zeller. Earlier this week, the Indiana Attorney General filed a lawsuit against the IRS demanding that the agency stop giving tax subsidies to Hoosier State residents who buy health care on Obamacare exchanges. Since Indiana is one of the 36 states that declined to set up its own state-run exchange, Zeller is arguing that the IRS, on behalf of the federal government, does not have the power to either give Indianans health care subsidies or to punish people who don't follow other parts of Obamacare with taxes to fund such subsidies. In other words, Zeller is using the well-worn conservative argument of states' rights to gut one of the most important parts of Obamacare. Legal or not, the fact that Zeller is actively trying to make health care more expensive for his own state citizens, which, let's be honest, is what will happen if he wins his lawsuit, that is just very, very ugly. That's incredibly ugly. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hello. That fellow who the woman just referenced, that guy who was on, he was mentioning Ronald Reagan.
David Sue.
The very annoying person. But he said Reagan had this plan when he, you know, did it in the air traffic controllers. No, he didn't. He caused a ton of problems flying. And, in fact, Reagan's plane was involved in near midair. So
Reagan's plane what?
And there was an incident when he was flying where the other planes got too close. I remember that from the day I was alive and flying myself in those days.
Uh-huh.
So, let's check it out. I mean, I don't have the reference here. But,
sure. No, I remember, too.
It caused chaos.
Yeah. It was in 81. It was a chaotic time, and we're very lucky that there weren't any midair collisions.
I was just going to mention one other thing, too. About the shutdown, can you imagine on Boehner with the Koch brothers and a handful of people putting us in our financial, one of the other calls mentioned the financial cost, $17 billion, you know, way back. Can you imagine a situation where a handful of people kind of know what's going to happen? Boehner could call the vote up, or he could meet our debt, not have a debt crisis. And you can imagine that kind of insider information and how many people could profit by that.
Every Republican member of the House of Representatives, actually, every member of the House of Representatives, the Democrats have sworn off the practice, but the Republicans aggressively pursue the practice, can do inside trading by law without having to follow the rules of the FEC that would put you or me in jail. So my guess is that a lot of Republican United States legislators, a lot of Republican members of the House are probably shorting T-bills and T-bonds right now, and we'll go really long in a real hurry about 5 minutes before Boehner declares that he's going to put this thing, the CR, down for a vote. And they can legally do it, and they can make a lot of money.
Brother.
And it's one of the reasons why these why so many of these Republicans go to the House of Representatives as middle-class people and come back as millionaires.
Yeah, and the people that back them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you, Richard. Thanks for the call. Wes in Medford, Oregon, listening on KBBR. Hey, Wes, what's up?
Hey, Tom. A couple of things. A great show. A previous caller mentioned, kind of stole my thunder. She was saying we need to take it to the next level, and meaning progressives and just caring average Americans. And, you know, that was one of the topics I wanted to touch on because I'm driving down the road and, you know, I flipped to, in Medford, Oregon, you know, we get Lars Larson here. I don't know if you know who he is.
I know Lars, yeah.
But, yeah, and, you know, he's just freely saying President Obama needs to be impeached. There's plenty of that he's done plenty of things to impeach the president. You know, clearly not true. You know, you listen to Mark Levin, and he's constantly harping on Sharia law, that the government is being taken over by Muslims and, you know, there's a coup going on. And we have a president who's committing impeachable offenses. And then you have Michelle Bachmann, who just recently said the end times are near because President Obama is aiding Al-Qaeda. And it's really getting dangerous with a government shutdown. I live in Oregon here, and I'm finding that, you know, the average people don't understand. When I talk to them, they just don't accept that these things are going on. They kind of roll their eyes and say,
I get it, Wes. Wes, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I get it. Good rant. Thanks a lot for the call. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Show, coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news on the ongoing GOP hostage situation, also known as the shutdown. Plus, anything goes Friday, your turn to decide what we talk about. And remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Get over to lasthours.org and check it out. Lasthours.org. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. Solar World has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.